Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Zero episode 31 starts now. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Brenda Davis, joined today by Jamie Jurak.
Good morning.
Jenna Anderson.
Hey, everybody.
And Jim Viscardi.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. The triple.
Oh, hello.
The three of you. Now I'm just over here with my B. What a weirdo I am here. Welcome to the show. Cool show today. We are going to talk about the first episode of What If in the second half of the show. Full spoilers. If you're worried about animated spoilers, they are coming. Like, well, we won't be animated. Our spoilers are in live action, but they are spoiling an animated show. Those are going to be after our break. So if you haven't watched yet, you're welcome to stay with us. I want to welcome Fabio B2289, who is joining us live for the first time, always listens in podcast form. You're still obligated to download the podcast. That listen counts, okay? With this episode, I'm making a prediction here based on the trending numbers that we get. We're going to surpass 500,000 listens to the podcast with this episode. So thank you all, Phase Zero Nation, for getting us to that milestone. The journey to 1,000,000 continues. Let's go. Let's go. What else do we have today? We're going to talk about Hugh Jackman. We're going to talk about James Gunn. We're going to talk about movie delays. On next week's show, I'm going to talk about Shang-Chi, because I'm seeing it on Monday night. So I'm very excited about that. I might even see it twice by this time next week. So
I'm seeing it next Wednesday, so I'll just miss it for the podcast.
That's okay. I'll spoil it for you.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm just kidding. I will not. I absolutely will not. So I'm very excited about that. But we're going to start with some MCU news, as we do here on Phase Zero. First of all, the biggest news of the week, if you ask me, is that Aaron is here on the podcast. Aaron, how you doing?
Woo. Yay.
We had a technical issue with Aaron. We're happy Aaron is on the show, the wise one. All right, we're going to roll into the news. Hugh Jackman addressed the Wolverine rumors. Jamie talked to Hugh Jackman. We're going to get to that in a second. That's cool as hell. But first of all, he talked to my buddy Jake Hamilton from Fox Chicago. Jake outright asks you, you know, they're doing variants, they're doing multiverse. Is there any story that can bring you back to Logan and Wolverine for another Marvel movie? And Hugh Jackman said Kevin Feige's not in his inbox. He said there's two huge Kevin Feige has to reach out and Ryan Reynolds has to stop reaching out. So by the sounds of this, I believe Hugh Jackman. I don't think he has reprised Wolverine for a multiverse story yet. I don't believe there are plans for it yet.
Is Kevin Feige the email kind of guy? I feel like he's more maybe a cell phone kind of guy or a text message guy, maybe WhatsApp. I don't think he's an email guy.
Or he just like shows up with an armored van outside your house. Like there are a lot of ways he can reach people.
Yeah, but across the board, we're learning though. Feige might just not be a communication guy at all because Andrew Garfield didn't get a call. Hugh Jackman hasn't gotten an email. I don't even know what to believe anymore. But no, I believe this one. I don't believe that. I think Hugh Jackman, he talked in detail about how going into Logan, he really believed that that was his final outing as Wolverine. It gave him a great like headspace to play the role. And I would love to see him back for like a Secret Wars, but it also feels like he might be done and that's okay.
It's tough because he is like, it's like you want him back so bad, but Logan really was perfect way to go. It's so hard.
Yeah, I'm right there. I'm on that same train with Downey as Iron Man. I think he had a great send off. I think Hugh Jackman's Logan was such a him and James Mangold made such an awesome movie.
Yeah, but we know Robert Downey Jr. is not done. I think that's the difference. He's coming back. He's voicing AI. You know that's going to happen. He is going to either show back up in a flashback. He's going to be maybe help Riri's like AI for a little bit. There are so many ways for Robert Downey Jr. to come back, not as like current living, breathing Iron Man going on adventures, but like flashbacks and all sorts of other stuff that like I am not buying the RDJ is done with Iron Man.
I mean, he signed a
Marvel Legends contract, basically, right? Like, you know, when all the old time wrestlers come out for like two or three appearances leading up to WrestleMania, that's what Robert Downey's gonna do leading up to Secret Wars.
I think he might be done. Like, I genuinely would be more surprised to see him back than I would to not see him back. But it would be the most Tony Stark thing Robert Downey Jr. could ever do if he put himself in the Ironheart series as the AI. But yeah, so that's and Jamie talked to Hugh Jackman. Jamie, I want you to tell this story.
Oh gosh, what a delightful human being. That was a big deal for me just because, you know, X-Men was the movie was my introduction to Marvel. So Hugh Jackman's like the reason I'm here today. So that was really cool. But I did ask him about the day that he posted that Wolverine art and a picture of Kevin Feige and kind of broke the internet. And it was kind of so pure because he was just like, I didn't mean to do that. I was just trying to share fan art. I like fan art. He said, you guys are all smarter than me because it didn't occur to me to not do that. So I believed him. I really don't think he was teasing anything. I think he was just having some fun. And so that was great. And then he made fun of my energy, which I will take to the grave forever. It was, that was really fun. So yeah, that's up now if you want to watch it.
I appreciate you not doing a Hugh Jackman accent like I would have done.
Oh, no.
Because it would have just been so insulting. But it's a good thing you talked to him and not me. You guys can find that interview on comicbook.com. I'm actually going to – we have a link to Jake's interview with Hugh and the clip of him asking about it on the Phase Zero Twitter. I'm also going to find the clip of Jamie and get that clipped out and tweet that from Phase Zero so you can see that bit as well. And then you can go watch the full interview, which I always encourage. And yeah, that's enough Hugh Jackman talk. I think we all agree. He might not be back, but there's always a chance. Moving on.
Speaking of characters who may or may not come back, James Gunn did an interview with Entertainment Tonight where he basically said, comparing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 to the Suicide Squad, he said, there is, quote, a much bigger sense of danger for all of our characters in the Suicide Squad because we know all of them could die. Whereas in Guardians, yes, obviously I killed Yondu. I killed the big original group, but that isn't the same thing. We know most of them are going to make it out alive, at least for two movies.
That's the scary part.
Yeah, I know. I saw this the other day and I was like, he should not have said that. Like, I'm very curious what he means by that. Either way, I know Rocket Raccoon's probably death in volume three is going to kill me. I know. Like, now that the world has seen the Suicide Squad, I think that people will agree, like, however he kills off Rocket is going to, like, be a gut punch of emotion. So, but now I'm curious after this comment, like, if he means other characters might die too. So I was curious what, like, all of y'all think about that.
Aaron, you haven't had much time to talk yet. Today, I want to hear from you.
After I want to give some space after the Suicide Squad, because of course we think, oh, everybody's just going to get it. Everybody's just going to absolutely bite it in the most crushing way possible. I think that in our household, there was a minimum of like 8 oh my gods uttered over the course of the screening, just like, oh no, like what? No. And people you didn't even have any like real crazy emotional connection to before the movie. So you can only imagine after all these adventures with the Guardians, it's going to be sad. It's going to be really sad. Let's not talk about it.
I am on that train of like, well, Rocket's going to be the one to go, right? But I remember going into Endgame and being like, well, Cap is the one who's going to go. They're not going to kill Iron Man. And they both kind of went, but really they killed Iron Man and Cap was still alive. So I kind of feel like maybe that's what's going to happen here. Maybe we're all expecting Rocket and someone else is going to go. But they already killed Gamora once.
Gunn has said that like Guardians 3 is very much Rocket's movie. Mm-hmm. And like the finishing of Rocket's story. And I mean, And I don't want it to happen, but that's probably what's going to happen.
I think Drax is going to go.
I can see that. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be Rocket, only because people have a really... People get really upset about animals. And even
That's
though
he's true.
Like not yeah. a total animal and he's CGI and whatever, and I see some major backlash of that choice. and I see Drax going just because of everything Dave Bautista is constantly saying. Yeah. Like, okay, well, you could just be done then. How about that?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it would also be fulfilling for Drax. Like, if there is a moment where, like, somebody needs to sacrifice himself, like, he could be like, I will see, it'll be like Jensen in the first Iron Man. Like, it'll be like, I get to see my family again. So yeah. I could definitely see Drax being the one who kind of pulls the Iron Man and lays down on a wire and makes the sacrifice play that Cap made in the first Captain America movie that Iron Man made in Endgame. And I think, I don't know, Dave Bautista. Yeah, I can see him.
Drax the Destroyed.
Jim Viscardi. You were sitting on that one for so long. Oh, man.
I mean,
well, I want to talk about the fact that the Suicide Squad did not perform exceptionally well this weekend.
It's a weird thing to kind of unpack here, right?
Because
you gotta remember it's rated R. So that already has it, working against it for just people going to theaters. Yes, kids are gonna sneak into the movie theater and whatever, but like, okay, pandemic, still a thing. You can get it for free with your HBO Max, like subscription. And there is so much unevenness in the media landscape right now, like as far as different ways you can get your media, that it's hard to quantify what feels like a success or not. Now, for us, I think the best way to determine success right now in the grand scheme of things is more word of mouth. And like, yes. Are people talking about it? Are people talking about it past the first opening weekend? And if people are, then okay, maybe it's got some legs. If not, then I would say probably not a success. And I wonder if like what people are seeing now with putting this stuff on streaming is kind of like that weird Netflix effect that we hate so much, right? When like binge stuff happens and you watch it over the weekend and then you forget about it because you're already moving on to something else. Where before, but in the good times, like people didn't, a lot of people went to go see movies on opening weekend, but a lot of people also went to go see movies on the second weekend. And you don't have, you know, that doesn't exist now. It's because there's not any of that opportunity or whatever and like what and whatnot. And so look, Jungle, you could say the same thing about Jungle. Nobody is talking about Jungle Cruise. Had an okay opening weekend, but no one's talking about it. And like, I don't think Disney would be happy with that. And so like there's a number of factors at play there. The fact that it, according to, I think some sources, that Suicide Squad opened behind Mortal Kombat as far as HBO Max plays go has me surprised.
That's the thing that makes it all very weird to me.
But here, if you try to explain Suicide Squad to a normal person, they have no idea. Like that is a hard plot line to try to explain, right? Mortal Kombat.
Hold on, I want to hear Jamie.
I'm just curious how much it was advertised about HBO Max. Like, it is literally our job to know this. We talk about it being on HBO Max like every day. But I called my mom the other day and I was like, "Have you watched Suicide Squad yet?" And she goes, "Jamie, you know I'm too afraid to go to the movies." And I was like, "Nah, mom. It's on HBO Max." And she freaked out. Mm-hmm. She was like, "Oh, I have plans tonight. I'm so excited. I'm going to watch a Suicide Squad." My mom had no idea that that was even an option. So
my mom said the same exact thing. I had to explain to her.
My mom
like,
too.
Yeah, I had to explain to her because we went to see it in theaters on like that Friday. And she was like, "But why? It's at home." And I was like, "I wanted to like have my boyfriend see it in theaters for the first time. But then we wanted to rewatch it at home over and over again." And I also think part of the caveat with HBO Max numbers is that like you're not necessarily counting the number of people who are sitting in front of a screen when something is pressing play.
Yes,
like I think that just because it is slightly beyond or behind Mortal Kombat doesn't mean that you don't have necessarily more people watching it. There could be like larger like groups of friends or families that are all sitting down and watching it, as opposed to that might not have been the case with Mortal Kombat. So I think like the numbers, we're just in this uncharted territory of not being able to like quantify a lot of this, and I think that's why it's so confusing from our perspective.
Well, yeah, some of it was a bad movie.
Go ahead.
Someone I love Mortal Kombat. You should. Like,
That movie was not good.
As someone who's had to watch these like streaming projects and try to figure out how any of these places makes the sort of decisions on what gets renewed, what gets cut loose, what is a success in the arena, I think that the Suicide Squad social engagement looks about in line with some of the other streaming favorites like Stranger Things or Lucifer or any of the DC shows that are on HBO Max that started out on DC Universe. So I guess it's a success in that. But I know that for some people that are making decisions at the top, that probably does not hold the same weight when you're spending the kind of money they spent on the Suicide Squad to make it. There's a very, very large gulf.
I think this was the only movie that did not move, right? Like, it just did not move on the schedule. It's always been this date. And so it's interesting.
So go ahead, B.
The interesting thing that I'm trying to get to here is that the box office obviously was an underperformance. I think under normal circumstances, in a theatrical only environment, this is an $80 to $100 million opening weekend. It landed at 26. It also landed behind Mortal Kombat on HBO Max. So you look at the box office and you say, well, yes, that is a factor of the pandemic. That is a factor of at home for free, like that, or that is a result of it being at home for free. But then you look at the fact that it finished at second, and I'm like, well, maybe the box office isn't, like, maybe this just wasn't marketed that well. Maybe there just wasn't an interest because people couldn't tell it apart from a movie they already watched and didn't like. I went to see it with my roommate's girlfriend and a couple people, and my roommate's girlfriend was like, well, is this like a Marvel movie, or is this just like, what is this? She didn't know what it was. My mom didn't know it was on HBO Max. So I think that there's some sort of disconnect in the marketing. But the point is that with all of those things considered about how overall, even on HBO Max, it didn't do gangbuster numbers like a lot of us thought it would. Can these studios that are releasing Spider-Man and Venom and these other upcoming films and Bond look at it and say, well, should we hold? Because just like last week, we were having this conversation about Spider-Man No Way Home. Is it going to get delayed? The Suicide Squad drastically underperformed at the box office. There's no question about it. There are factors in that, but there's absolutely no question. $26 million is a devastatingly bad opening weekend. If HBO Max is not a huge, like, if this isn't a huge growth point for the IP overall.
Yeah.
So... because you could say all eyes on Free Guy, but Free Guy is never a movie we expected to perform very well, even though it's getting fantastic reviews. It was never a movie we expected to be $100 million opening weekend or in the conversation of Venom or Bond or Spider-Man in the first place. So does that box office like Shang-Chi is it's really Free Guy and Shang-Chi, I think, that are now going to determine whether Venom and Spider-Man make their release dates.
Well, they pulled the only in theaters from the Shang-Chi marketing. Now it says, now it just says in theaters. Mm-hmm. And so I almost wonder if they're going to look at Free Guy and then make the decision after that, which I think is an all the reasons you just mentioned is potentially an unfair comparison, because I think there's a lot of things going for Free Guy. Like, you can say like, oh, it's another Ryan Reynolds movie. And I think Ryan Reynolds is at the level now that like you can say like going to see a Ryan Reynolds movie is like going to see a movie that The Rock is in, or going to see a movie that, you know, whoever is in. I think he is at that level. And so, but it's different in the sense that like the audiences are pretty different. And so if they're going to judge this off that to then make the decision on Shang-Chi, I mean, that's where it's going to get interesting. And I think if Shang-Chi goes, I'm going to call it now. If Shang-Chi goes digital, that increases our odds a lot for Venom moving.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. I mean, I think, I think that's a very clear connection that I think is going to be made. And I'm really interested to see if Shang-Chi goes to Disney Plus Premier Access, or if it stays theatrical only. I also just don't see the buzz around Shang-Chi like you do around Marvel movies usually, which is weird to me. I do think it's a sign of the times where people are just not focused on entertainment like this. Like, I think under normal circumstances, Shang-Chi would have felt like a much more of an event. But I feel like in our world, in our bubble, we are all very excited. But I'm not seeing a lot of buzz. My friends don't know about it. Like,
This has happened before, though. And using our own website traffic data as basis for this, right? When Doctor Strange was about to come out, no one cared about that movie. Nobody. Like, it had zero buzz. No, there was no real excitement for it. Once that movie came out, gangbusters. Like, everyone cared about Doctor Strange. Every story we did explaining things and doing all that stuff, like, did great. I suspect we'll get the same here with Shang-Chi. The question, though, is, like, it's if it you know, screens to a smaller audience, that's where it, you know, it gets a little, that's where it gets a little hairy. But, like, I wouldn't necessarily say the pre-buzz for these Marvel movies is necessarily work against them. Ant-Man was the same way. Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, it's just been a really long time since we've had a new Marvel movie where we didn't know a single existing character from something else.
Exactly.
And I think that, like, we've gotten so used to, like, our favorites coming back. And so I think you're right. I think once the movie comes out, as long as it's good, which I imagine it will be, I think you're right. I think it's going to boost it up a bit. But it's just, I think it's hard to get excited for some people when they don't know any characters, if they haven't read any comics.
I was talking to my boyfriend about that the other day, because we were talking about the trailers and, like, if we were somebody who knew nothing about this corner of the Marvel universe, like, what would we glean from the trailers? And it's like seeing the Abomination and Wong fight in IMAX. It happens so quick that if I'm not paying attention and if I'm somebody who doesn't know who either of those characters are, that moment means nothing to me. So it's like even the kind of grab of, like, nostalgia that they gave to us when that trailer came out doesn't really land the same if you're a completely normal person watching it in a theater. So I don't know what the audience reaction is going to be to this, like, leading into it.
That's a really good point, that this is the first true origin story of all new characters in a while. So it doesn't have that same kind of, oh, it's Captain America, it's Black Widow, it's Thor type of buzz like a sequel usually does. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how the Suicide Squad and Free Guy affect Shang-Chi, affect Spider-Man, and affect Venom. Venom, Let There Be Carnage, already delayed to October 14th earlier this week in New Zealand. So we'll see what happens there, because Sony does not have a streaming service. So we'll see.
That's only like a week, though, right, for Venom? It's original in New Zealand?
Yeah. I think it's late September.
September 25th. Yeah. So, or September 24th or something. So that's a few weeks. So that's interesting. But, there is already Venom 3 talk happening, though.
Yeah, so Tom Hardy talked to Esquire, and he said, quote, "I'm thinking about the third movie as well, because I think you need to write that at the same time. A third won't be greenlit until the second is successful, but the studio was really, really pleased with number two." Which, like, I have to say, I love Tom Hardy just taking such a weird ownership of this character. Like, I love that he has, like, almost a writing credit on the sequel. I love that he's, like, a producer. Like, his ownership of this is very funny to me and just very fascinating. So, like, what do you guys think about potentially getting a Venom 3?
Man, I can't wait to be talking about Venom 9.
It's going to be the new Fast and Furious.
Really, though. Take Venom to the moon. Just do anything. Yeah.
Now, listen, I didn't hate the first movie. I didn't think it was, like, great, but I had a really fun time watching it. I thought the third act felt kind of dated. Like, I felt like if that movie came out 10 years ago, it would have been excellent. But this sequel looks fantastic with that recent trailer. Andy Serkis directing is great. I'm here for it, and I think eventually they're going to find ways to work in the multiverse, and you're going to get a Spider-Man in there, and you're going to get more Spider-Verse stuff going on in the universe that Venom launched. So I'm for it. I'm okay with it. I dig it. Does anyone not want that?
No, I mean, we talked about it the other week. Yeah. I love the trailer. I think the trailer for Venom, the most recent trailer we got for Venom 2, is so much fun. And so, like, give me all the Venom.
What are we going to do when Andrew Garfield? What are we going to do when Andrew Garfield shows up in Venom, Let There Be Carnage, and it's just part of that universe?
That would be amazing.
Jamie's not a. That made Jamie feel crazy.
We're not getting Venom 9 if that happens.
All right, we got a little bit more news. We're going to take a really quick break and come back for a couple more bits of news, and then we're going to dive into the first episode of What If with you all. See you in just a second.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the program. We have some updates about MCU productions that I know Jamie is excited about, so I'm going to let her take it.
Yeah, we've got The Marvels and Secret Invasion currently filming. Brie Larson talked about being on the set of The Marvels on Live. We got Samuel L. Jackson posting a photo with his fake beard, and he had a shirt with the Carol pager. And so the big question, you guys, is it a coincidence that these two things are filming at the same time? I don't know, Aaron. What do you think?
I'm just excited to see all this other stuff still going in production, because then hopefully we don't get the entire timeline shifted back a year, like we've all been talking about. I want to see what happens with this movie, but I am also like Jenna. You can attest to this too. Aren't you worried about Kamala? I want to know what's going on before I invest too much love into this, right?
I'm hopeful with Kamala. Like, I think that the way that she is going to be introduced, and I think like just seeing her play off of Carol and Monica is going to be very, very satisfying. So like, I'm just excited for that. With like the Marvels and Secret Invasion of it all, I'm just kind of like, what cast members are going to cross over into the Marvels? Because it's like, it seems like they could very easily just kind of have some sort of overlap there. That would be really cool. So I don't know. I'm excited that they're both filming. I feel like that's kind of deliberate on Marvel's part, probably.
Isn't it nice not to know the entire cast and all the stuff that's coming out too? That's also going to be fun, right? Where we're not like talking about like the deep lore of the movie before we get a trailer. Hi, Sony person who's watching this.
I think it's cool they're filming them simultaneously and that we don't know anything about them. Do you guys think Carol's going to show up in Ms. Marvel on Disney Plus?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Has to.
Without a doubt.
I mean, well, okay, we said that about Doctor Strange. Okay, to be fair, Doctor Strange was supposed to show up.
Yes.
But they cut him out. But I don't know. I think we see Carol stuff. I don't know if we see Carol.
There's that scene in the Ms. Marvel comic where they're on the rooftop, like meeting for the first time. And I'm like, you have to do some variation of that either at the end of her show or at the beginning of the Marvels. Like that has to be a thing that you can kind of do to establish their dynamics. So I feel like it's also Doctor Strange relating to Scarlet Witch's origin story is drastically different from like Captain Marvel setting up Ms. Marvel's origin story. So I feel like you kind of have to include her.
I will say too, Brie Larson been lifting for like 3 months now. She's been lifting a lot. If you go on Instagram, you see her just throwing the plates around. Yep. So she's obviously in shape to be in the suit and be in character and stuff. She could have already done this. We just don't know.
And they could also have filmed a scene for Ms. Marvel on the set of The Marvels.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They could get away with it. But yeah.
But isn't Kamala in the movie?
Yes. Right?
Like, yeah, yes. Oh, okay. Well, that's my point. Is they could have filmed something there to put into the end of the Marvels. I mean, they've had post credit scenes directed. Like, wasn't Thor: The Dark World's post credit scene directed by James Gunn?
Mm-hmm.
So they've done stuff like that before. Last bit of news: the Shang-Chi runtime seems to have been revealed as 2 hours and 12 minutes, which you'll be watching in theaters and maybe on Disney Plus. For comparison, the first Iron Man is 2 hours and 6 minutes. The first Avengers is 2 hours 23 minutes. The first Guardians is 2 hours and 1 minute. Civil War was 2:27. Doctor Strange is 1:55. And right, the closest that I could see in my quick prep for this show this morning was that Spider-Man Homecoming is 2 hours and 10 minutes. So that's a pretty good gauge of how long Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings is. Now we're on to What If. The first episode is available now on Disney Plus. If you have not watched it, we're going full spoilers for the premiere episode. We're going to go around with our reactions as we do. We're going to get a bonus reaction because we have 5 people today. Jenna, you're at the top. The rules don't change.
What if? I enjoyed it. After hearing you and Jim's reaction last week, I was kind of going in just like, I wasn't uncertain, but I was just kind of waiting to see. And I think that there is so much of it that I liked that the couple aspects that I didn't like kind of were vastly outweighed. I'm still not entirely sold on the animation style. I do think there are moments where it is a little more wooden than it probably could be. But I appreciate just like from an artistic aesthetic standpoint and from also like a fight choreography standpoint. I think the fight sequences in this episode really kind of surprised me. So I enjoyed it. I'm just curious to kind of see what the progressive episodes bring.
Jamie.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't this. I've only seen the first episode and it wasn't really for me. But as we discussed in the very first episode of Phase Zero, I don't really like the first Avenger. And this was just kind of an extension of that movie. I feel like once we get to different storylines, I'm going to love it. It's just this particular one wasn't really my style. However, I loved hearing some of these voices come back. And you know, I love me some beefy Peggy up against scrawny Steve. That is a dynamic that I was really into. So it was fun. It was just my personal taste, not like the way I would have chosen to start the whole series.
Jimmy V.
Look, I think the thing for me is that this episode felt too much like the first Avenger. And it was too similar for it to feel like it stood out in any way on its own. Like Captain Carter had so many of the same story beats that Steve had that it didn't feel like a drastic change that we were kind of promised, right? Like, yes, we got Steve in a giant, you know, Iron Man suit, you know, suit kind of thing. But as far as like Peggy goes, I would have liked to not have seen her follow the same path Steve did in the first Avenger and do things in a way that Peggy would have done. I also thought it was a little weird that they really kind of lingered on the fact that like Peggy's a woman and she can't do anything. And then like, even when she becomes Cap, like they're just like, you know, that's still the fact, like in Agent Carter, the show, like it happened. And then like, boom, like she's often doing her own thing. So I'm like, oh, it felt a little much, but I do have a theory. It's a
hold
great
on,
one.
Save it. Save it. Save
it's
it.
A great one.
Okay, save it. Aaron, you're up.
I really liked it. I sort of like the first Avenger, so kind of all the beats being really similar was fun. Scrawny Steve is a delight. That would be really, really funny to have. If this had been like a live action thing to have, Chris Evans is, I'm Chris Evans and Hulu has live sports on a small body would have been great. But yeah, it was a good time. I enjoyed it. I think that the setup for the second episode should be really interesting because if it is what we all think it is, I would assume that we're going to get to Marvel Zombies quicker rather than later. That's like right when I could sink all my time into this stuff. So it should be fun. I'm excited. I went into it like Jenna. I was like, is this first episode going to be for me? Because they sounded kind of underwhelmed by the first one and then it warmed up over time. But I'm like, man, if it gets better, we're in there.
I'm with Jamie and Jim on this one. I wasn't a big fan of this episode by any means. I'm also not a big fan of Captain America, the First Avenger. Easily my least favorite of the three, but I feel like that's a common take of the three Cap movies. But I just didn't. I wasn't really. Whoa, people like the first.
It's my second favorite Cap. I don't like.
I'm like Civil War is definitely my like bottom of my least favorite.
Yeah, you know, crazy. Civil War is one of my favorite MCU movies. Such a good movie. But anyway, yeah, it felt like you took the first Avenger, trimmed out an hour of it and just put Peggy Carter in Steve's role. And I can tell you the next two episodes aren't like that. Like, yes, this is a thing where it's like, well, what if a character was a different character? But the next two episodes are like, what if a character was a different character? How that would change everything. Where this was just like, well, the same things happened, but it was just Peggy. And I agree with Jim. I thought like, I love like the kind of girl power thing they were going for, but it did feel kind of heavy handed and very kind of like, I don't know, nobody change their opinion, which I guess is part of that era and the problem they were trying to point out. But I feel like we could have given Peggy a bit of respect by the end there, put some respect on her name. But I do think Peggy's going to be a character we see a lot more of. And I think Captain Carter is going to be pretty interesting to see how she develops a relationship with the Watcher going forward. I know she's one of the characters that has a through line who won't be back right away in the next couple episodes, but I think I know she will be back. So well, hopefully, I know the next two episodes I liked a lot more. I thought episode two was a lot more entertaining than this one, and I thought episode three was really surprising.
Yeah, the third is my favorite of the bunch.
Yeah, and it's not even close for me. But yeah, it's interesting. And it's really interesting to see how people are reacting to this, because usually we agree, we all have pretty similar opinions on this stuff, and we all kind of have just different levels of how much we like it. And I feel like this is the first time there's been like a Marvel thing that some of us are like, I didn't like it. And other people are like, I really did. So it's interesting. And Jim, you're allowed to give your theory now. Go ahead.
Well, I want to ask the group real quick, just like quick reactions. What did you guys think of the animation style? I think a lot of people seem to like be really hating on it, and that's fine if you don't like it. I thought it looked great, and I thought the action was super slick. And I actually didn't mind the animation style. I kind of like that cell animated, you know, animated cell kind of look for stuff. So that like that's just a pure, you know, artistic preference for me. But I'm curious to what you guys thought before I get into my big brain theory.
I'll let Aaron go first since he's top of the.
Okay. So I like cell shading a lot. That's like my whole thing. I like Y2K aesthetic quite a great deal. I wrote an entire slider for the site where people were joking around that it looks like a Spider-Man from MTV.
From the MTV.
Yeah. I mean, and I didn't mind that show, although, you know, you watch what's on when you're that age. But still, I thought it was fine. Jenna?
I agree. I think that there were moments where it looked breathtaking. Like, I think that when it especially got like more just wider shots or like fight sequences and stuff, it was like, oh, this is really showing the potential of this animation style. I think it's more when it is just conversations and the way that the mouths are moving and the way that like the shading on the faces and the way like the sources of lighting, just from like somebody who took cinematography classes in college, the sources of lighting in certain shots were like, this is wild. Like, this is not how any lighting would work in the real world at all. But like, there was so much of it that did look pretty to me that I was like, I can overlook these a couple moments where it looks really weird.
The animation was, it didn't enhance my experience for sure, but it also didn't detract from it for me. I thought it was just fine.
That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, it's not like my preferred animation style, but it's not bad. Like, it's pretty, it's I appreciate everything Jenna points out. And that's pretty much where I'm at with it.
I very notoriously don't like the Star Wars animation show styles. I can't get into that. And this is way more my speed because there's like a little bit of a throwback aspect to it. Like Aaron was saying with like Spider-Man and stuff. So with that, I appreciate more. But also, it's just not like, I honestly didn't watch this thinking about the anime. I'm somebody who's like all about dialogue and story. And I really wasn't dwelling on how it looked.
Yeah, I like Brandon Moore said in the comments, I like the animation style, but it took a minute to get used to. Mm-hmm. It definitely took me a minute to buy into the world through that animation style. Jim, I'm on the edge of my seat, Jim.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
So there's the scene where Peggy is fighting what looks like Shuma-Gorath with the tentacles during like the whole big Red Skull fight or whatever. And like, so she goes through the portal. Now, inevitably, at the end of the episode, she comes back out, you know, after the fact. But I venture to guess that in the time that she is in that portal, she makes a stop somewhere else and then gets put back and then comes back and finishes her episode.
What they should have done was show that at the end of this episode to give us a hook, because I feel like a lot of people are not going to be hooked. But anyway, I think you're right.
I like, maybe. That's where I think, whether it's Doctor Strange, whether it is in just another episode of What If or whatever, but I think that moment is the through line to get is the start of Peggy's through line, because I think not only do you get the comparison, obviously, for the, you know, or you get the events of stuff that happened in the first Avenger, but it also is Steve's journey, you know, with, you know, what he did in Endgame. And so I think Peggy goes, does a whole bunch of stuff, and then comes back. And I hope to God that that is Shuma-Gorath, because, man, I need that one-eyed tentacle monster to show up in the MCU like no one's business.
I have good news and bad news. I'm fairly certain Shuma-Gorath is in Doctor Strange 2, but the writer of What If said that was an obelisk, as seen in the opening scene of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Oh.
So, I hate to rain on your parade today, but you will get your wish later, I believe.
That's a shame.
Yeah. But maybe, hey, maybe they're just playing coy.
I just need to put this out there. In a recent issue of Savage Avengers, Doctor Strange microwaved Shuma-Gorath and made him explode in the microwave.
It's amazing.
Classic.
Straight. Yeah. Savage.
I think it's hilarious how we are not believing people who say stuff like A.C. Bradley said that's an obelisk. Hugh Jackman said he's not coming back as Wolverine. And just after last week's show, as Aaron said, what's going to be the bomb that drops after we wrap? There was a photo of Kirsten Dunst and supposedly Deborah Ann Woll, who plays Karen on Daredevil, but we all were, she was like, that's not me, and we were all like, yeah, right, yes it is. And then we had to see a picture of that same woman without a mask on to believe it. Like, we just don't even believe these people anymore.
The amount of people who spent time that day trying to figure out like the shape of her ear and trying to like discern all of that, I was like, wow, yeah. We are desperate for information about No Way Home. Like, it is insane at this point.
There were people who thought that Jamie, you interviewed her for WandaVision.
Yeah, they thought that Evan Caulfield was Scarlett Johansson or something.
And Evan Peters. I saw people saying it was Evan Peters with a wig on. Mephisto.
I remember the Evan Peters with a wig.
Yep.
Mephisto confirmed. A couple Easter eggs I wanted to point out. So if you guys have anything else to talk about in the comment section, drop your comments about What If. We will talk about them. And if anybody on the panel here has anything they want to bring up, this is going to be the chance, because this is my last talking point of the day. There were a lot of dance references, which were just also, I thought, heavy-handed, because we get it. Steve and Peggy wanted to dance. They got their dance at the end of Endgame. Like, you're really making sure that everybody watched it. Hey, Janelle in the comment section, Comic Book Nation co-host Janelle Wheeler also has a great Twitch channel. Suggest supporting her on that. Bucky almost fell off the mountain. I understood that reference, obviously, from Captain America, the First Avenger. Bucky fell to his not death. Black Widow could never. Bucky says, you almost ripped my arm off. And that's a reference to Bucky losing his arm. So I'm sure there's more than that. I don't know. It's so obvious that there's the obvious parallels. Like, are we just going to list off all the things? Yeah, probably next week, but I don't know. I don't feel like doing it today.
I think Kofi had mentioned this earlier in the comment section, and I think he brings up a good point, where I think the success or failure of what the individual What If episodes are, mm-hmm. if you can buy into the premise, right? Or if the premise at all is of interest to you. Right. And so if it's not, then like, OK, then you're out, then you don't care no matter what happens. Right. But if you're captured by the premise, which is why I think episode 3 is so interesting. And it's also why I think Marvel may have done themselves a disservice by showing too much in trailers, mm-hmm. because now we know what some of these situations are, and so we already are just like, oh, maybe I'll care about that one, or maybe I won't care. And that's why I think like episode 3 is such a fresh surprise that you didn't see it coming in any of the promo material, that I'm like, oh, okay, like, yeah, I can get behind. And it's a great premise, and I'm like, oh yeah, I can get behind this one.
There's a really good surprise in episode 2 as well.
Yes, I mean, that's a more cameo surprise.
Maybe just for me. Maybe because that's, I love that. But it's not Nova. It's not Nova. Nova is not an episode 2 of What If. I know that's going to be the first thing everybody thinks. No, but there is something that I really enjoyed about episode 2 in addition to everything else I enjoyed about episode 2. Jenna, have you watched you've watched the first 3, right?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. All right, well then, I'll see myself out. But yeah, so, I mean, do we want to like all put numbers on it out of 10, or do we want to just skip that part?
It's a solid 6 for me, I think, and I feel like that's harsh. This first episode is probably a 6 for me. And again, like, it's not that I thought it was bad, it just, I didn't think it was particularly interesting. And I like some of the ideas it plays, mm-hmm. with. I would love to see more Captain Carter. I think that's a great way to kind of like revitalize the Peggy Carter character in a way that that works. But like all of the other character, like how all the other characters reacted in this episode, like, I don't care if we see them or don't see them again.
That's where I was at. It felt like there was not a lot of stakes. You know, like, I do want to see Captain Carter. I think the suit looked great. I think Hayley Atwell will do that really well. I imagined watching her kicking those Hydra Nazi asses in live action, and I was like, this would be so sick. Mm-hmm. But it was in this animation form, and I had no attachment really because of how quickly it was moving.
I would love to see more Ross Marquand as Red Skull, too.
Like, that was also
very good. But that's it. That's all I like about it.
I will also say the skinny Steve voice actor that was not Chris Evans did a much better job than I was expecting. Like, I was worried going in there because like the not Tony in the in that one trailer, like really, really just set me off. But like this guy did a pretty decent job. Like, I bought that this was skinny Steve. So I think he like did way better than he could have.
There's an episode two character that's not the MCU actor, and it kind of took me out. Jim, right? Don't you? Yes. Did you?
Yes.
I for me, the not MCU actors are kind of jarring. I think the not Chris Evans, which I you know what? I need to credit this person. So continue. I don't want to just refer to this actor as not Chris Evans. I want to give him the proper credit.
Was that Dominic Cooper in?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that I do love Dominic Cooper.
Same, but I'm a big Mamma Mia fan.
Oh, it was Josh Keaton.
Okay. Shout out to Josh Keaton. Yeah. Not Chris Evans. You did a good job. I feel like a dick just saying, like, yeah, not Chris Evans. Like, give this guy some respect.
I'm getting flashbacks to Wonder Woman 84 when we were just like, not Steve Trevor, like other Steve Trevor. Yeah.
That deserved that, though.
Yeah.
That was more deserving.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So,
I would like to just shout out Jeffrey Wright, because I'm a big, big Jeffrey Wright fan. I have been since I was like in high school. And he's just like has the perfect voice for this role, and mm-hmm. just when he speaks, it's like butter is being slathered into my ears and body. And I'm just really stoked about that. I have a fun story. One time Jeffrey Wright walked past me and went, "Nice tat," and I still don't know what tattoo he was referring to, but it was pretty cool.
Wow.
Just wait till everybody sees your WandaVision tattoos and everything once we get back to in person stuff.
I know.
Look at that, Richard, put her on the big screen. Look at that art. Oh my gosh. Yo, that is sick. That is
so I did think Jeffrey Wright did a great job, like in a Rod Sterling-esque kind of role. And I think that's what made me appreciate it even more. It made it a lot of fun.
He didn't even really do anything in the first episode.
No, but just that opening narration or whatever, that's
his voice.
Yeah.
It gets you in the mood, man.
I mean, I agree. He's a good voice for the Watcher, and I hope he becomes a live action Watcher one way or another. But I mean, it was kind of like we're hyping up Jeffrey Wright as the Watcher, and then he has like three lines in this first episode. I was like, wait a second. We want more of that. I want more of that. So, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, we have an interview with Jeffrey Wright on the comicbook.com YouTube channel. It's available now. You should watch it. Jeffrey Wright knows a lot about that character, which I think is really fun, and I appreciate it. And I do think he's going to interfere eventually. I think he's going to get involved.
Oh, that's breaking the rules. He can't do that. He can't break the rules.
How many times has he broken the rules in comics, Jim? Zero? No, fake news.
I think like only once. So
no.
With the fact that like he made a point in that for like a right away to be like, I will not interfere. Okay. Yeah, I think that's what we call a foreshadowing.
Yeah. Hey, you about to say psych? But I think that's a good way to wrap up today's show. So if you are watching us on Twitch, make sure you hit the follow button. If you're watching us on Facebook, I don't know. Do whatever you do on Facebook and YouTube. And if you're listening to us in podcast form, leave us good reviews, tweet the links to our shows, screenshot it, tag us on Instagram. We love it when you do that. It's a free share. It's a free retweet. We love self-promotion, and we love supporting the Phase Zero community, supporting us. So thanks for that in advance. Jenna, any parting words?
Nope. Just follow me on Twitter at Hey, it's Jenna Lynn.
Aaron, hit us with your farewell.
You can find me at Summit Lake Hornet on Twitter, and happy, what is it, like the, is it the 20th anniversary of Nickelodeon, or is it the 30th anniversary of Nickelodeon today?
It's so, gotta be because I was 30. Watching that as a kid.
Go watch some Doug and some Rugrats and stuff, y'all. It still holds up.
It sure does.
Jim Viscardi.
Mega Diaper Jail. Babies, that one, the one, the Fantastic Four parody, that's what you need to watch.
Jim, anything for the Phase Zero community on your way out the door?
No, there's a movie that opens up this weekend called Coda. It's on Apple TV Plus. Go watch it. It's great. It's not a superhero movie. It's not anything like that. But it's probably, you know, I'm a bit biased, but probably one of my favorite movies of the year. So go check it out.
On that note, also Free Guy is one of my favorite movies of the year, and our audience will get a particular kick out of it. I'm not saying more than that. Jamie, your parting words?
We'll talk about that next week.
My parting words are, it wouldn't be me if I didn't just mention the fact that even in animated animation form, Bucky is clearly in love with Steve Rogers. And that's That's my final party.
We love you for it. That's today's show. You can hit me up at Brandon Davis BD. Go see Free Guy if you can do so. And we'll see you next week with full thoughts on Shang-Chi and Legend of the Ten Rings. Let's go! All right, Richard, send us over.